As part of the state legislature's ongoing examination of the effects of COVID-19 on essentially every aspect of life in New York, lawmakers recently conducted a remote hearing into higher education, which is particularly time-sensitive, with colleges set to open, in some fashion, in a few weeks. And joining me to discuss this issue is Assembly Higher Education Chair Deborah Glick. Thanks for making the time, Assemblymember.
Oh, thank you so much for being interested in this subject.
So in the wake of the hearings, how are you feeling about New York campuses opening up to students in the very near future?
We heard two different segments of response from students, issues from faculty, and from the institutional players, SUNY, CUNY, the Commission on Independent Colleges. From the student side, we heard about remote learning and the issues that students had around that, since in some instances they will continue to be doing remote learning, especially from the City University. That included access to internet, sharing space with younger siblings who are also going to school, and for homeless students, they are not allowed to use their laptops in the shelter. They don't have access to Wi-Fi. So those were somewhat startling concerns. The other, of course, from the schools are, you know, being able to either test students coming in or having them quarantine for 14 days, finding space for them, and dealing with social distancing. So in some instances, they may be doing large lecture halls, again, remotely, and using those lecture halls for classrooms so students can be socially distanced. But I think that, you know, there are concerns about being able to keep students from congregating or inappropriately sharing spaces in larger numbers than is permitted.
When it comes to SUNY specifically, I think they're looking at a revenue drop of anywhere between $800 million and $1 billion. Do you feel like they'll have the resources they need?
Well, clearly they will be struggling, and every area of the state will be in have difficulty without a federal revenue replacement. And, of course, we're hoping that particular programs that provide additional supports for the poorest students who are coming from communities that have been particularly impacted by COVID, that those will be the last programs that will be reduced in any way. But I do think that while there was, an attempt to be positive about their ability to go forward, of course there's a concern for not just SUNY, but a lot of the smaller private institutions that don't have big endowments and are generally working on fairly close margins. They are as important to upstate communities as SUNY is, and it is in the interest of the state that we not lose any of these schools because they are vitally important to the local economies. They are usually the largest employer.
Did you get any indication from either SUNY or CUNY or even the private nonprofit colleges what the size of their student population is going to look like in the fall? Do they have a good guess on how many students they might end up losing?
There was some sense that there was not as much of a bleed as they had anticipated. And I guess some of that is a reflection of students who are currently enrolled not wanting to change courses, mm-hmm. number one, and those who are planning on coming to schools anxious not to lose that opportunity of that experience.
Acting SUNY head Bob Megna told your panel that no decisions have been made about adjusting tuition based on the type of instruction students receive. Did he give you a timeline for their deliberations on that issue? And, you know, regardless of what SUNY decides, how do you think the state should handle that issue?
I think that the reason SUNY and other schools have lost as much money as they have has been because they have refunded room and board
right.
and other fees that are meal plan fees and other fees for services that are not delivered. The cost of instruction from the tuition side, the largest driver of that is personnel, faculty, and you still had to pay people to perform their tasks, as well as having some amount of administration on whether people are there remotely or not. So I think that they are anxious to have students back on campus, at least in part, because of that is, and the room and board is an element of their business model, if you will. So I think that the money that they lost, a substantial part of it was, in fact, what they refunded. And so they've made no decision about the increase in tuition because we've been pressing the reality of family incomes having dropped. And, you know, it becomes a balancing act between you don't want to lose enrollment and you might if you add an additional financial burden at a time when all families are struggling, or most families. There are probably some families in the state of New York that are not, but they generally are not overly concerned with the cost of the tuition.
We're speaking with Assembly Higher Education Committee Chair Deborah Glick, and you mentioned, you know, the cost of education, and one of the programs that some middle-class families and lower-middle-class families have used as a sort of last dollar measure to pay for tuition is the Excelsior Scholarship Program. What do we know now about the fate of that program? Is there any indication whether the state is going to be in a position to fund it for the upcoming school year?
They have opened an application period last week for, and in the first 5 days, they had 8,000 applications. I don't know how much more has been added to that total, but I do think that they are processing but not awarding any. And, of course, some of that is about everything is on hold until we see what happens with the federal administration. Now, of course, the House passed a very substantial revenue replacement as well as broad support for unemployment, et cetera, 10 weeks ago. And the Senate has not acted, and that uncertainty has frozen everybody in place. The governor is not paying certain contracts and
right.
Has stopped certain things, and obviously the Excelsior program is not making any awards as yet, in part because they don't know if they'll have the money.
Do you think that regardless of whatever the federal money is, it's possible that it's not going to cover the hole that New York is currently looking at. So do you think that state action to increase revenues is needed to either supplement whatever federal money we might get or make up for just complete lack of federal money that we don't get?
Well, I have been, I've had a pied-à-terre tax, which would be additional tax on second properties in the city of New York worth over $5 million, which is not a primary residence. We had great hopes that that was going to be instituted a couple of years ago, and at the last minute, the governor refused to encourage its passage. So there are several other proposals, and certainly if we do not get any federal help, it'll be vital that we do that. But even if we get some We have worked on what has been an enforced austerity. The governor has had a spending cap of 2% year over year, which has really restricted and limited our ability to support essential programs. And that 2% spending cap coming out of a depression is it just has to go out the window. There's no way that we can cut our way out of this crisis. We will need as much federal support as we can get. And beyond that, we will additionally need to see what revenues are available. And I would rather see a broad-based income tax than what we have done over the years, which is adding fees to, you know, telephones and cable service or whatever. Those are hidden fees that nickel and dime the public, when in fact the most appropriate progressive way is to ensure a broad-based income tax. The governor is proud that he has reduced rates to rates that haven't been seen since the 1950s, but our population has grown since the 1950s. So it does seem to be counter to what makes rational sense.
Our conversation's been pretty much focused on the public colleges and universities, but you know, we're home to a lot of private colleges and universities as well. And I was reading that this landscape is likely going to change, or has the potential to really change moving forward, with some colleges and universities expected not to be able to weather this storm. What's your take on what the landscape might look like in the future for private colleges in the short term and long term?
Well, clearly as I said before, has hit particularly the smaller institutions that are not sitting on a big endowment. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, over time, we have provided less supports in general. There is something called Bundy aid, and it's sort of interesting. We're one of the few states that provide any unrestricted aid to nonprofit private colleges, and the formula was based on how many degrees they graduated, right? Degree granting to individuals. Mm-hmm. And there was a formula. If the formula was running, we would be probably providing over $100 million. It's down to about, I think, $37 million. And that is, for them, you know, generally used for financial aid and, you know, would be very hard for them to proceed without having those dollars. But as I said, whether it's a public university or a private university, particularly the small ones, are very, very important employers in their areas and, in many instances, the largest employer. And so it's not just about the institution and its importance to providing a diverse array of higher education institutions. They are also vitally important to the local economy. And it would be a shame to lose the diversity of opportunities for New York students. And quite frankly, SUNY does not have, in almost every instance, there probably are a few colleges that are in the further reaches of the state. Most of them do not have additional space. They don't have room to absorb the loss of even a handful of these private institutions.
Then considering that, do you think the state has a vested interest in propping up some of these nonprofit colleges if they need help surviving in the near future?
I don't know that I would refer to it as propping up so much as providing supports that enable students to make a full range of choices.
finally, we've got an ongoing search, I guess, for the next chancellor of the SUNY headquarters, I guess. Any idea how that's going?
I don't, and there had been some conversation about whether or not we needed to do a search, and obviously SUNY is, you know, a large institution. We sadly lost a brilliant chancellor, and, you know, I am not privy to all of the reasons, but, you know, New York has to stop treating the university, the SUNY system, as just another state agency, which is how they have been treated. They need to recognize, and that's the executive, needs to recognize that this is a unique institution that is, in fact, a college. It is not the Department of Transportation or the Office of Children and Families. It is a university, and a great deal of New York's ability to attract the best students from around the world needs to have at least consistent support year over year, if not some specialized attention. And that hasn't really happened, and that is unfortunate. And so I'm hoping that we can continue to attract high-quality faculty and high-quality university leaders, but we have to do that by treating it like a university and not just another state agency.
When they're making that search or considering who should be the next chancellor, do you think it's important that they try to find someone who's a person of color, since we've never really had someone like that leading the SUNY system?
Well, I think diversity is always important, and I think that Nancy Zimpher was the first woman.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, in a world that has seen changes and changes in the student body and the faculty, I think both the faculty and the university leadership needs to reflect the diversity of the students.
How do you feel about the not-so-shadow campaign to advance a close Cuomo ally, Jim Mylotras, who currently runs Empire State College?
Well, you know, he's rather recent in that position.
Indeed.
And I think needs, you know, is not what I would say is a nationally recognized leader in higher education. He's a brilliant guy, but I think that the search for a chancellor should be looking for someone who has national, if not international, recognition as a educational leader.
We've been speaking with Assembly Higher Education Committee Chair Deborah Glick. Assembly member, thank you so much for making the time. Really appreciate it.
So much appreciate the opportunity, and I wish you and yours well.
You too. Stay safe.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by Destiny USA. Shopping, dining, and entertainment all in one location. For more information, go to www.destinyusa.com.